Indeed, it's a park that deserves a lot more attention. It's the oldest park in Africa, situated on the eastern flanks of the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's the oldest park for a reason. It's incredibly rich in wildlife. It has more species of birds, reptiles, and mammals than any other park in the world. And of course, it's famous for the fact that it's the only park in the world that has three taxa, three types of African great apes, the chimpanzees, the lowland gorillas, and of course the mountain gorillas, for which it was created.
And something you've been involved in is the battle to stop poaching, or the kidnapping, some people would think of it. They think of gorillas as being almost very human, but there is a terrible poaching trade in the gorillas from the park, isn't there?
Well, that's one part of a great many problems that the park has been facing. It was the killing of the mountain gorillas that was the reason why I became director in 2008. There was a great massacre of mountain gorillas the year before. But that's largely been brought under control. In fact, you know, thanks to the enormous sacrifice of the Congolese rangers who manage the park, over 140 of them have died since the war started in eastern Congo.
Yes, these park rangers do risk their lives, don't they, to protect the wildlife in the park?
Yes, that's absolutely right. It's the park that has suffered the greatest, you know, that's paid the greatest price for its protection for any park in the world. So it's been a very difficult period for our rangers.
And all this at the same time that UNESCO, that UN World Heritage body, has listed the Virunga National Park as a World Heritage Site. That's a label, though, which sounds nice, but it hasn't really helped in many ways, surely.
Actually, it's helped enormously because it's given it a legal status. In fact, international conventions like the World Heritage Convention are recognised in the national law, in the law of the land in Congo. And so that's actually given us the legal basis to keep Virunga safe as best we can. It's greatly strengthened our ability to protect the park.
And of course, there is that battle to protect wildlife in the Virunga, but also the worry too, a lot of the natural resources of the park are under threat by the oil industry. Oil's been discovered in a region close to there, in Uganda, around Lake Albert in particular, never mind Lake Edward. And ultimately, I suppose when the oil industry is given the rights to drill in the region, that really does affect the environment of the park, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, there's a great expansion of oil in the region, in eastern Africa at the moment. And, you know, much of that industry is developing and is in the interest of the peoples of that region if it's done properly. But, of course, for it to be done properly, it has to be legal. And in the case of Virunga National Park, it's not legal. In the case of Virunga National Park, we have a British company that's made the decision to enter the park for the exploration of oil. And unfortunately, under Congolese law, that's not permitted. So that's been a great confrontation for the law enforcement authority under very, very difficult conditions. But our staff and our institutions stayed very firm on that.
I suppose one of the problems has been that particular oil company you refer to has been given the right by the government, not necessarily to do drilling in the conventional way that we would think about for oil and gas, but basically do some sort of testing, seismic surveys. But that's maybe the thin end of the wedge.
Well, you know, we're dealing with legal issues on an incredibly important subject, which is the extraction of natural resources from what is essentially a war zone. It's a region in which more than 6 million people have died as a result of the illegal exploitation of natural resources. There's almost a universal recognition that that's the underlying cause of this terrible war that's affected eastern Congo. And so if a company comes in with the intent of extracting resources illegally, it becomes a very, very serious issue. And of course, you know, you have to look at the letter of the law. And it's true that the company has been given a concession legally by the Congolese government, but that concession is much bigger than the national park. Their decision to go into the park is their decision, and that is actually illegal. So their concession is legal, but not their decision to go into the park.
Do you fear that the government of Democratic Republic of Congo is probably just paying lip service to what is the right thing to say, protect natural resources? At the same time, they're very interested in oil for the economy.
Well, I work for the Congolese government. I'm a law enforcement officer. I have the equivalence of rank of a colonel in the Congolese security services. I work for the National Park Service. We haven't been ambivalent at all. We are the legal authority. We represent the state as far as law enforcement is concerned. And we've been absolutely clear about it. It's not legal. It can't happen.
So you think that the government really is not only saying the right thing, but behind the scenes is also very willing to do the right thing and protect this World Heritage site, the Virunga National Park?
Yes, I think there's enormous commitment on the part of the Congolese authorities. I think there's a lot of commitment on the part of the Congolese people to protect that site. It's partly because it's an incredibly important piece of World Heritage Site, but it's, of course, their economic future as well. And so they can see that what's beginning to happen, a tourism industry that's developing, hydroelectricity that's being developed around the park from the rivers flowing out of the park, flowing out of healthy forests. And it's that drives a local industry that's beginning to happen. And so it's a much more diversified, healthy economy. And really, it's a choice that the Congolese people are going to have to make. And it's theirs to make. But at the moment, there's enormous support for the maintenance, for the protection of this park.
Now, you've been campaigning to encourage up to $1 billion worth of private investment in the region. I would wonder if that's a bit ambitious, but perhaps I've got the wrong picture. What do you think?
Well, what we're hoping is that by bringing two key assets to the table, one is stability and the other is energy, then it will catalyse private investment. And really, that's the future of the park. We've actually got off to quite a good start. It's not, the idea is to bring in $200 million worth of investment in the energy sector, in hydroelectricity, small hydroelectric plants that power industry. And off the back of that, other investors will come and make it, as you say, a $1 billion industry. We're about 25% there now. And so we're actually quite hopeful that in the next 5 years, we can actually draw in that level of investment that provides a very compelling argument, argument for the local communities living around the park to decide what's in their best interest.
So we have a situation, I suppose, that the DRC has to effectively make up its mind. Is the future oil and ruining this great natural heritage of the park, or is there a way of using the natural resources of the park in a better way? As you say, for example, developing the electricity industry. But that's just when we focus on the DRC. We shouldn't forget that this is in a region of Africa which is very close to Rwanda and Uganda. Is there an economic benefit for those nations there too?
Well, it's interesting you say that. Rwanda has developed its tourism industry over the last 15 years. They share a similar history in terms of the terrible tragedy that they suffered in 1994, the Rwandan genocide. But they were incredibly committed to their protected areas. And the International Tourism Office in 2010 registered $430 million of revenue from the tourism industry. And that basically hinges on their mountain gorillas. So it just shows that it's not an environmental issue. It's above all an economic issue. And it's an issue that can transform the economy in a very positive way for the people who live in one of the most poverty-affected areas of the world.
That's Rwanda, of course. What about Uganda as well?
Well, Uganda has a very, it's a similar case. They've committed to developing a tourism industry, and they've, the growth of that country has been impressive over the last 20 years.
Now, for as long as I can remember, certainly in recent times, this eastern part of the DRC has been an area of conflict. Can you see a time in the near future when there will be a guarantee of real peace?
Well, I think that guarantee will come when the economy takes off. I mean, it's a bit of a chicken and egg issue, but we believe very strongly that there has to be economic growth for peace to arrive. You can't wait for there to be peace to drive the economy. Otherwise, when peace arrives, you're not ready and we slip back into war. We've had, on average, a war every 4 years, a major war every 4 years in the region in which we live. And it's going to take the creation of massive employment opportunities for those young men and women, but actually in particular the men who many of whom have been drawn into these militia groups, into these armed groups, these illegal armed groups that roam in the area. They're estimated to be between 5 and 8,000 in North Kivu, in the province in which we work. We feel that hydroelectricity can drive an economy based on agricultural transformation that can create between 80 and 100,000 jobs. So that's just to give you the scale of what's possible and the impact that it can have on diffusing this conflict by creating employment for a young generation of Congolese.
And when you try to sell the park for what it is, a real World Heritage Site of natural beauty, whether it's the slopes of the volcanoes, the images of gorillas around the hillsides and the mountains, or birds flying there from Siberia, obviously enjoying the better weather at a certain time of year. It's an easy park to sell, isn't it?
It is in many ways, although, you know, we have to overcome people's fear of the region. It's actually an incredibly welcoming area, and it's an area where economic opportunities can develop. And I think, you know, I think the next few years will show that it's one of the most promising areas on the African continent to develop the economy.
I wonder if you'd tell me about this movie, this film, which has been Oscar nominated. It certainly is striking a chord with many people, isn't it?
Yes, it does seem to have worked. A few years ago, we suffered enormously from the great isolation that we were in, and we figured that the best way to move forward, to actually draw attention, was to make a feature film, because it was the most creative and complete way to actually do justice to this incredible park that is Virunga, and of course to the incredible people working in it and around it. And so that was done very successfully by an incredible team, and really brought to the world through, you know, Netflix's efforts to promote the film, not just as a film, but also as a campaign over an incredibly important issue. And alongside that, the work of Leonardo DiCaprio, who became the executive producer of the film and of course brought brought to this film an enormous number of people who may not otherwise have heard of Virunga. So it's been a huge boost for us, and we're enormously grateful for it.
When Hollywood pays attention, the world, in theory, by default, also pays attention. That must be a real positive for you in this fight to protect the park.
It does seem that way, indeed.